Okay, that means that we're recording. I think it's time to go.
Excellent. Hello, I'm Simon Mercer. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film, music, theatre, television, anything that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and I in the last little while.
And what a potpourri, I'd even go as far as to say a smorgasbord of fare we have to sample this week. We've got film, comedy and drama. We've got live music, we've got new recorded music, we've got internet, television. My word, it's making me giddy.
In my case, that's a sign of ageing, Steve. But can we start filmically, which in terms of running through our menu for today, is that a word, filmically?
It is now.
It is now. You've seen Bad Neighbours and Nice Guys.
Yes, I have indeed. You found a preacher.
Not before time. You saw some of a show by Cherie Curry.
I did indeed.
Yes.
And I gather that you've got your hands on a few new music CDs recently.
Yes, not off the back of a truck, I'd hasten to add.
Good man.
Yes, yes. But anyway, we'll get on to the music a little bit later. Let's start with movies, which is what we normally do.
Absolutely.
Steve, The Nice Guys. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm thinking I do want to see this. Do you think I should?
I can't recommend it highly enough.
Oh, that's a good recommendation. Tell me more.
Unequivocal, right there. It's very entertaining. It's a somewhat dark comedy based around a film noir 1970s private eye thriller.
Yeah.
Set in Los Angeles. The story, such as it is that Ryan Gosling is a rubbish private investigator who finds himself trying to find out what happened to a dead porn star by the name of Misty Mountains. Yeah, that sort of sets the tone for it right there, doesn't it, really? So he's been absolutely rubbish at his job, and he finds himself cooperating with an enforcer standover type fella played by Russell Crowe.
Yes,
who is sent to punish him for something that he didn't actually do anyway. But that's irrelevant. But they end up putting together this absolutely beautiful. It's what's referred to these days as a bromance.
Ah, yes, yes.
Loathsome
yes.
word, but the idea is fantastic. It's astonishingly funny.
Oh, good.
Written and directed by Shane Black, who, I mean, he started off his career with films like Lethal Weapon, if you go far enough back.
Right. I know, he did the third Iron Man movie, I think.
Yes, he did. He was drafted in specifically by Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is a funny, funny film.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see the chemistry between these two actors. I mean, I think I've seen a few of Ryan Gosling's films, and I think he's a very interesting actor to watch. And Russell Crowe, I know he's been around the traps, he probably cops a bit of flack now, but he makes it look all very easy and laid back with old Russell, doesn't he?
He's not bad for an Australian, is he?
Well, an Anzac, shall we say.
There we go. He basically looks like John Goodman in this film.
Oh, does he?
And in many ways, that's a good touchstone, a good reference point for the character he's playing. John Goodman with an edge.
Right, right.
He's bitter, he's grizzled, he's embattled, he's less... the film is obviously 1970s porn industry in Los Angeles. It's profoundly sexist without being misogynistic, which is a very, very difficult line to tread.
Yeah.
But he's profoundly misanthropic in general. Is Russell Crowe's character in this film. At one point in the early on, he explains he's not married because marriage is when you buy a house for someone you don't like.
So that's... Okay.
So it sets the tone of the level of humour we're getting in this film. The script does not let up.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, sometimes you see films have got, bantering back and forth between the main characters. It can, after a while, get a bit tiresome.
Yes.
This doesn't.
Oh, good.
I was trying to figure out how they pulled it off, but they managed to keep it tight and sharp and still fresh without simply going, okay, enough already, get on with the story. It's a very entertaining film.
Good stuff.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to win any awards. It's too light and fluffy, but yeah, it's very, very, very intricately, well, I'll just say intricately plotted. The plot is bonkers. The plot's to do with a porn film that's supposed to bring down the auto industry. Yes,
okay.
Exactly, yes. So, you know, there is a plot. It's complex, it's tricky, it's intricate, it's barking mad. You've got Kim Basinger as...
Oh,
yeah, she crops up with... I think she spent her entire fee from this film on Botox.
But she was in the other great L.A. detective crime noir movie of years ago.
You're talking, obviously, if you're talking about L.A. film noir, it must be L.A. Confidential you're talking about, surely.
I think, yes. So they've drawn a nice little bow there between Kim Basinger's appearance way back when, and here she is still again in the similar sort of setting. Quite nicely done.
Yes, and if you're surprised that they've done that, she looks permanently surprised all the way through the film.
Okay.
And credit absolutely has to be given to the young lady whose name I'm not entirely convinced I know how to pronounce. Anguri Rice, I believe her name is.
Uh-huh.
Young lady who plays Holly March, who is the daughter of Ryan Gosling's character, Holland March. And as often happens in films like this, it's a fairly standard kind of trope, really, where the daughter is the parent to the father.
Right.
She's by far the best detective in the outfit. Plays the character with a delightful degree of snark without being obnoxious. And again, very, very difficult line to toe. But I was very impressed.
Good stuff. Okay, all right. Well, I'm definitely going to go and see The Nice Guys then after that description.
Recommend it very, very highly.
Good stuff. Now, I will mention, Steve, but I'm only going to mention it briefly, another film I've seen recently, because we've spent so much time talking about these pesky superhero movies lately. There's been yet another one come out in the last week or so. This is X-Men Apocalypse. I did go and see it. I just want to say this, and this thought struck me watching this. This film was a sort of a fair to good entry in this sort of genre.
Yep.
But I'm just becoming so desensitized to all these explosions and scenes of destruction we're seeing in all these movies, you know, buildings being walloped and cars being tossed around. And I mean, the CGI is very convincing, it's very realistic, but there are so many of these scenes in so many of these movies, it's all just washing over me. I mean, it doesn't have the impact anymore. And really, any movie where it's superhero or anything else, I mean, they've got a good story and a good script and some good acting. I'll take that any day of the week. Luckily, in X-Men Apocalypse, that they do spend some time with the characters, thank goodness. And when they do that, and they've got some decent actors there.
Yes, I'm looking at the cast right now. I mean, Michael
Fassbender's. Jennifer Lawrence. I mean, they've got some decent actors.
They've got Sophie Turner.
Yeah. So,
hey, hang on a second. Are you sure about Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. What do you know? Yes, of course. Yes.
She plays Mystique. And she's been in, this is the third X-Men film she's been in. So anyway, look, it's like you just said about Nice Guys, it's not going to win any Oscars. But I just couldn't help but think, oh, I'm just getting so tired of all the distraction. It doesn't really have any impact anymore. What I'll remember is the dialogue between the characters and the character development. And that's, I think, what you and I, we both enjoyed Deadpool so much, didn't we? Because it was just so different and refreshing, and the script was so good.
It was. I mean, you end up with a sense in some of these films. I've not seen X-Men Apocalypse, but in a very real sense, we all have.
Yeah, because that's totally true.
The feeling I get is that it's basically just a series of explosion scenes or fight scenes or boom scenes. Strung together with connecting bits. Am I being unfair on that? Or...
Oh well, there's a character called Apocalypse, and this is a long-standing character in the comic books. It goes back many, many years. What they've done here with the, I won't spend too long on this, Steve, but there were three X-Men movies that came out in the early 2000s, and then they went back to tell the backstory.
Right.
So there was one called X-Men First Class.
Yes.
And then the second one only a year or two ago was Days of Future Past. So they've kind of been retelling the story from earlier on, and now they've got up to where they – it's almost like they did what they did with Star Wars. So – Where they go from here, I don't know. The more recent films have been a better quality than the first ones, in my opinion. They had better actors and better scripts, but still, it's just yet another superhero movie. So, speaking of things which they churn out, you've seen the second instalment in a film. To be honest, I haven't seen it, but I think I know what to expect. This is the Bad Neighbours, or in this case, Bad Neighbours 2. How good was 2?
It wasn't a number 2, if that's what you're asking. Okay. I've been practicing that gag all weekend. You can tell, can't you? Very proud of it. It was, well, I mean, I think you finally did see the first Bad Neighbours film, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I have seen the bit. Yeah, a while ago.
Setup's dead simple. You've got Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne play a nice young middle-class couple buying a house in the suburbs, and there's a fraternity next door. This uniquely, bizarrely American concept of a bunch of male university students all living together for the sole purpose of consuming as much alcohol and violating as many women as is humanly possible.
Yeah.
They don't exist in that. Fraternities do exist, but not obviously in the way they're being portrayed. And it's a depiction that dates back to National Lampoon's Animal House, obviously.
Yes.
And it was a fun film. It was a nice bit of tossaway entertainment that was fairly cleverly done. And it was the battle between the middle class family and the frat boys, and that was the story.
Yeah.
So obviously it sold well. How do you remake that film differently?
Yes.
Well, this time, instead of being a fraternity, it's it's a sorority.
Of course.
Yeah. it's curious. Instead of just being a regular sorority, this time the sorority is founded by a young lady played by Chloe Grace Moretz. That's a name that's not easy to get you. Mm-hmm. Your mouth around always. She's got too many names, that woman. But she plays a young lady who isn't quite willing to buy into the sort of the foil for the men cheerleader kind of character that sorority girls are expected to be. She and a couple of her mates say, "No, we want our own sorority that can be our own people. We don't want to have to be the little sisters to the fraternities. We want our own house."
Yeah.
And so the house that they buy is the same house that the fraternity used to live in next door. And you can see where it's going. You can sort of see the progression here. And it's going to be exactly the same thing where basically Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne, who have now got the child that Rose Byrne's character was pregnant with in the first film, has now been born, and she's now pregnant with the second one. And so, again, there's a lot of ground being retrod on this one.
Yeah.
And it's funny. It's entertaining. There's some wonderfully gross out humor. There's some absolutely foul scenes, but astonishingly, in the midst of all of this, it actually manages to be something of a feminist tract.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I know. I didn't see that one coming myself. There is definitely a feminist reading of this film.
Okay. Well, you might have expected the opposite, of course. But can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you're familiar, of course, with the Bechdel test, I assume.
The which test?
The Bechdel test.
Oh God!
This was a little. Is this film feminine? Does this film have strong female characters? Little, very, very simplistic little test that you can apply to a film. Does the film have two named female characters?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have a conversation with each other, and do they talk about something other than a man?
Ah,
and it's referred to as the Bechdel test.
Okay.
It's obviously very, very flawed. Sex and the City 2 passes it. So obviously it's not the last word in whether or not a film has these feminist credentials. But certainly Bad Neighbours 2 presents young women as being able to stand up for themselves, operate on their own level, not simply be subservient to the teenage boys around the corner.
Yeah.
And the heroes of the piece are very definitely women who refuse to fit into that particular stereotype. So, even though young Chloe Grace Moretz's character Shelby is ostensibly the bad guy in the film because she's leading the sorority girls against the neighbours.
Yeah,
she still is doing it in a profoundly feministically positive. There you go.
Okay,
that one way. And for all of its meaningful message on that level, it also manages to be very funny.
Okay, well, I think that's a couple of very good reasons to see it then.
Yeah, I mean, if you're stuck for a comedy to watch, I'd go with The Nice Guys, to be honest. It's fresher, it's sharper, it's funnier. But if you find yourself with a few dollars left in your pocket at the end, go and see Bad Neighbours 2. Go and see it over Bad Neighbours.
Okay, cool. And by the way, just because we often do this, there is a link between the film Bad Neighbours 2 and the aforementioned X-Men.
Yes, there is. I've mentioned it in passing.
Rose Byrne.
The very fellow. Now, which X-person was she?
Pardon me?
Which X-person?
Ah, well, she's not an X-person. She's an actual human person.
Oh.
Who's the love interest of one of the X-people, so... But she's been in I think at least two of these X-Men films. So she's a good actress. I like her.
Yeah, is she gratuitously Australian in X-Men, or does she actually get to be American?
No, she's American. She's gratuitously American.
Not sure which is worse.
Anyway, okay. Oh, well, there's a few movies to recommend there.
Very much so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, should we leave the moving image for a bit and talk about some music? I'd like to have a yarn about some new recorded music I've been listening to from three well-known, well-established New Zealand artists.
Yeah, two of them. Back. You actually bought some records, didn't you?
I did. Well, actually, I did, but I had some points on my... sometimes you use a credit card, you get these points and spend it. So I had some points, and I thought, I'll spend it on some New Zealand music. And so I got three CDs. Two of them are from artists who have long pedigrees. Dave Dobbin's one of them. He's got a new CD out called Harmony House. Mm-hmm. That's on RTC Records. And the chap and Jordan Luck, who you saw not that long ago.
Yes.
He's got an album out called Not Only But Also. That's on Universal. And the third is Holly Smith on Soundsmith Records. Her new work is called Water or Gold. But I'll start with Jordan Luck. In fact, you saw him, of course, Steve, at that Bowie tribute concert. And I think you said you thought he was in pretty good voice that night, wasn't he?
I was impressed with what I heard. Apparently, he didn't play the Wellington show. He did Auckland and Christchurch. But when I saw him in Auckland, I was well impressed.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a guy who goes all the way back to the 80s with a band called Dance Exponents.
Yes.
And look, what can you say? He wrote, he sang some of the great New Zealand rock songs, Victoria, Why Does Love Do This to Me? I'll Say Goodbye. I mean, this guy's place in our rock and pop history is, forgive the pun, rock solid.
I'm not forgiving that pun. No, that one's unforgivable, mate.
This album, Not Only But Also, basically, as you heard him when you went to see him, he's still got plenty of punkish energy and passion.
Oh, definitely.
The band is very much, feeling the same way on this album. Pretty much this is basically full-on rock. The songs aren't breaking any new stylistic boundaries for Jordan Luck. I think they have a sound that'll take you... This album has the music that takes you back to when he was doing his stuff way back when. So it's not new in that sense, but look, it's got plenty of punch. He knows very much how to sing a full-out rock song. Firmly rooted in New Zealand soil. There's mention here of Invercargill and Southland and Blenheim and cabbage trees and Eden suburbias. So it's a good album. I'd recommend it. I would say that the rocking songs start to blend into each other a little bit. And I thought when there were a couple of slower songs, and I really welcomed them just for a change of pace.
Yeah.
But good stuff, really, I would recommend it. One thing that was slightly intriguing me was the title, Steve, because I remember that way, way back, wasn't there a British satirical TV show, I think it might have been in the 60s, called Not Only But Also?
Yes, David Frost, if memory serves. But
that's an interesting title for a...
Does it tie into the record anywhere?
Well... Not really. not that I thought.
Well, curiously, he and the incredibly creatively titled Jordan Luck Band.
Yes,
are touring, presumably touring this album right now. But they've called the tour the Edens of Suburbia tour.
Okay, well, that's the title of one of the songs on the album.
That would make sense. To be fair, I mean, they're playing definitely the suburbia of New Zealand. Look at the listing here. We've missed most of it when they've played Hamilton, Napier. They played the Cozzy Club in Upper Hutt. I mean, this is the kind of venue they're playing.
Yeah.
But If anyone gets a chance to hear this before Friday the 3rd of June, he's playing in Mount Maunganui.
Yeah.
And then also Saturday the 6th of June, they're going to be in Mangafai Tavern in, obviously, Mangafai.
Okay. Hold on. Sorry. We went from Friday the 3rd to Saturday the 6th. Just run that past me again.
Yeah, my maths is yeah. not quite where it needs to be.
You're a time jumper.
Yeah, Friday the 3rd, Saturday the 4th. There you go. Gotcha. I'm glad someone's listening.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I think he would be – they'd put on a good show, these guys. You'd get your money's worth out of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, we missed them in Auckland, unfortunately. But, yeah, still a couple of dates left to go.
Okay, anyway, so that's Jordan Luck, his new album, Not Only But Also. The second one is from Holly Smith.
Mm-hmm.
My partner Sharon and I saw her play live. It's a few years ago now when she, believe it or not, she opened for Bob Dylan at the Civic in Auckland.
Wow. And
I remember her that night having this soulful, bluesy voice. She writes her own material, and this album is called Water or Gold, and so it's the latest example of her writing. And the music is... well, it's soulful and bluesy. Well-crafted song, well-performed. Her band knows its stuff. But I've got a butt to throw in.
Oh, dear.
Although I've got a rider to my butt. I listen...
That could be taken the wrong way, you know.
Yes,
that, right?
I know. Let me move on quickly before you dwell on that too much. I listened mostly to all of these albums in the car. And Holly's album was the first I put in the CD player. And I have to say... that to my ears, the mix just wasn't quite right. I thought her voice was just too far back in the songs, not prominent enough, and I was straining a bit to just really to hear the lyrics. And I thought, well, maybe that's just my player in my car. So But with the other two albums I played, I didn't have a problem hearing the singers. So I kind of feel she might have been let down a little bit on the production side of the album, which was actually mixed and mastered in the United States. But just in case it was my car or something, if you have heard this album or maybe heard it differently than I have, do let us know. I'd be interested to hear. You can send us an email to podcast@cravepodcast.com just in case my ears are playing up on me. I don't know if you had a chance to hear this at all, Steve.
I haven't had a chance yet, no. But
I
would like to give it a listen. This is Water or Gold we're talking about, right?
Water or Gold. It's Holly Smith's latest album. I mean, she's written it, she's performed it, she's very much in charge of it. But as I say, some of the post-production was done offshore. And I don't know, just to my ears anyway, I would have liked to hear her voice more prominently. Anyway, so that's Holly Smith.
Now, it's worth mentioning, incidentally, that we've missed her touring. She did a quick New Zealand tour in April.
Okay.
But she also performs with Fly My Pretties,
who
are going to be doing, I'm not entirely certain, String Theory, they're calling it, a brand new musical and visual experience in a series of intimate shows this August. It says it's a show that will explore the fabric of our existence through music, accompanied by breathtaking interactive visuals. Now... this could be absolutely brilliant. It could be completely barking. We'll find out in August. Apparently, she's going to be part of this with the rest of the Fly My Pretties collective. 12th of August in Auckland, and then 19th of August down in Wellington.
Good stuff. Well, I can tell you that from that show I saw a few weeks back, you know, I was talking to you about 21 Pilots at the Vector. They use their video material really, really well, and it just, it was superb. So it can work fantastically when you get it right. Okay, well, look, there's another piece of music I want to tell you about. The third New Zealand new album. This is from, this guy's been around even longer than Jordan Luck. We're talking Dave Dobbin here, Steve.
Yes.
Have you ever seen him live at all?
No, I haven't had the privilege.
Okay, well, he goes back to the late 70s, a band called The Dudes.
Yes.
Where he sang, he played lead guitar, and he also has given us, some big, big entries in the New Zealand songbook, songs like Bliss and Be Mine Tonight and Slice of Heaven and Outlook for Thursday, Loyal, Welcome Home. It's a very long list. This new album is called Harmony House.
Mm-hmm.
And of the three albums I listened to, in terms of its production, this is the most well-crafted. It's got the greater variety of musical styles in it, although most are ballads. But within that, there's some soul-ish, there's some rock, there's some country. There's a country song there. He's always written thoughtfully and cleverly. He does that here. He has not lost his nose for a melody. You'll easily find yourself singing along to many of the songs here. They're catchy and they stay with you. So in that regard, it's all good.
I hear a but coming, though.
Yeah. Well, you can't. You just have to, I think, you have to mention his Christian faith. And I, not because there's anything wrong with that, because it is prevalent in the lyrics. You can have whatever faith you like. That's entirely up to you. But I think you do need to know in this album, it's there. For some people, they'll think it's fantastic. Others might find it a bit of a distraction. There are songs like Waiting for a Voice, Tell the World, Ball of Light, and the title song Harmony House, where, you know, it's an unmistakable reference to a Christian life and the Christian message.
Fair enough.
I'm not of Christian faith myself, and it didn't bother me much, but I think probably towards the end of the album, I was feeling a little weary of the underlying message being there again.
So did you
but
feel
that could
you were,
be
being
just sung,
me. Were you being sung to or were you being preached to?
Well, that's where, you know, I was having a big discussion with Sharon about that very point. I think at the end, I started to feel a little bit preached to.
Okay.
And you don't want to get to that point, do you? There's nothing wrong with an honest interpretation and appreciation of what drives you artistically. But that, you know, that could be an element of just my own filter, obviously. And I think people would have different reactions to it. It's a very well-crafted album. There are some strong songs. There's no, and this is a guy who's been around for a long time. I don't see any sign here of his creativity fading in any way. I think he's probably, you know, he's one of these lifelong musicians like Dylan, who will just keep producing work as long as he draws breath. I'm not recommending it. I just think you just sort of have to be aware that that's part of who he is, and you may or may not. That side of it may not be to your liking, but just bear it in mind.
Well, yeah. Does The Devil Have All the Best Tunes?
Ooh, well, the Rolling Stones would tell you that they do. Does.
Well, they have sympathy for him, certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it didn't do you too much harm.
No, this is true. This is true.
And your wife, Debbie, was telling us of an interesting fact I hadn't picked up on when we were talking about all this, because she went to see Prince, didn't she?
Yes, she did. And?
And?
Yeah. He is apparently, or was, an active member of the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, well, you know, part of their religious practice as they are progressing through their development is they, as many of us know, go and knock on people's doors and try and spread the word. And they do, and these duties are assigned indiscriminately. So it doesn't matter who you are. You might be a world-leading musical megastar and funktastic singer. You're still going to go knocking on people's doors. And
yeah,
apparently, to his eternal credit, he did.
Good on him.
I have to take exception to something you mentioned earlier about Dave Dobbin. You said he has a good nose for a melody.
Yes.
Now, that's as tortured and mixed a metaphor as I've heard in some time.
Oh, well, he could sniff it out. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, we'll take it then. We'll take
it. Yeah, no, you're quite right. I got that completely mixed up. But what I mean is he, you know what I mean.
I know. I just couldn't let it go.
Yeah. No. Well spotted, sir. Talk about Steve.
Yes, there's a show I was really looking forward to a couple of weeks ago at the King's Arms. You're probably too young to remember Cherie Currie.
I think I am.
Yeah, she was the singer in a band called The Runaways.
Okay.
Who were part of the American punk new wave glam rock scene back in the '70s. And the Runaways would open for bands like Blondie, for example. So that's kind of the era that she's from and the scene that that they were in. You've heard of Joan Jett, I'm sure.
Yes.
Of Blackhead's fame. And Joan Jett was also a member of the Runaways.
Okay.
And the band has splintered over the years and disappeared. But Cherie Currie is still ploughing that furrow. And she made her first ever visit her first performing visit to New Zealand.
Okay.
Earlier this month. Played the King's Arms in Auckland. Now, I've been told that she'd be on stage at 9 o'clock.
Yes.
So I got there for 9, in time for the first of the two support bands.
Oh.
Exactly. Wasn't really the reason we'd gone. The first act were a bunch called Cheshire Grin. a local band who you've not heard of.
No.
I'm not completely convinced you'll be hearing of them again.
Okay, all right.
Adequate, but that will not say a huge amount more than that. Okay. Next up was Blue Ruin. Now, I tried to find out about Blue Ruin before we got there, and all I could find was a 1980s huge hair band. Seriously, yes. they made Bon Jovi look like you in terms of hair. You can imagine, denim waistcoats open to the navel. You can imagine the kind of image, right? I'm thinking, this can't... It could possibly be a support act for Cherie Currie.
Ah.
I was wrong. I was very, very wrong. Okay. It was a different act called Blue Ruin. It was a girl punk band from Auckland who thrashed and yelled and screamed with intensity, possibly more than with talent.
Okay.
If I'm being generous. All right. So Debbie and I sat through those, and it was all well and good. And then eventually, just as the lights were going back down and we could see Cherie Currie's band coming on stage, I got an alert on my phone from Auckland Civil Defence saying, horrific thunderstorms. If you're out, get home immediately.
Oh, no.
So we stayed for about 3 or 4 songs. I got some nice photos, which are up on the Crave website. And got to enjoy, for about 3 or 4 songs, some fantastic classic glam rock, blues rock, sort of trash rock, the sort of the really dirty, nasty rock and roll that I really personally enjoy. What I'd been waiting for all evening. She's good. She's still got a strong voice. She's got a stage presence that really was basically intended to show the two support acts how it's meant to be done.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff.
She knew what she was doing. And after 3 songs, we had to leave because, it was a typical Auckland winter night.
And did it turn out to be a bit of a horrific drive home?
Fortunately, we got home just as the heavens opened.
Oh, well.
So we got home safely. I hope she comes back.
Okay.
One thing that's worth mentioning, though, is we were at the King's Arms.
Yes.
And tickets, typically, they go for somewhere between $30 and $40 a show at the most. Yes. And there was maybe 100 people in the audience.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how the economics of a show like that even makes sense.
Did she do any other shows in New Zealand?
Not that I'm aware of. I think she might have done one in Wellington as well.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't sound like it's going to pay much of her rent.
No, I mean, I realise she's coming from Australia, not from America, to do the show.
Yeah.
But even so...
Hmm.
We spent half the drive home trying to figure out how that show even paid for itself.
Yeah, God.
If anyone knows, if anyone can explain to us the economics of a tour like that, please get in touch, because I'd love to.
Yeah, absolutely.
So enough then for music, TV.
Yes, and to be precise, internet TV.
Which is the wave of the future, isn't it?
Yeah. I do have access to Lightbox. This is the internet TV that's provided by Spark.
Right.
And this last week, I caught the very first episode of a new show called Preacher.
Ah.
Which, by what I can see from reviews, is definitely raising a few eyebrows in a good way overseas with the early reaction. This is based on a long-running series, well, quite long-running series of graphic novels called Preacher. The writer was Garth Ennis. The artist was Steve Dillon. They were published from 95 to the year 2000. Mm-hmm. So they were well-known, and they've eventually got around to turning them into something we can sit down and watch. And now the publicity, Steve says, oh, you've never seen anything like this on TV. Well, they would say that. Actually, I thought if you could imagine a Quentin Tarantino movie, maybe okay. Toned down a little bit, and then add in a supernatural element.
Okay.
You'd be pretty close to what this is about. This is the Preacher is a character called Jesse Custer. He was once a man of crime. He's now trying to live a good life as a preacher. He's working in a small Texas town. And in this first episode, we see that some sort of demon or supernatural force is going around the world possessing and destroying preachers. The same thing happens to our Jesse, but for some reason he survives this experience. And we meet him. We meet this crazed Northern Irish henchman who's like some sort of devil vampire character. He's called Cassidy. We meet Jesse's former girlfriend, who's a rather violent, violence-loving, kick-ass woman called Tulip O'Hare.
Obviously.
Great name. So lots of southern grit, soul, blood, violence. It's got a Quentin Tarantino feel about it. I liked it. It's not, though, groundbreaking, I didn't think, but very watchable. I will definitely watch more. Just a note, just like if you've watched The Walking Dead at all, have you ever watched The Walking Dead much, Steve?
I tried so hard to get into it, and for some reason it just didn't quite ignite for me.
Okay. Well, the main character there is a chap called Rick Grimes, who's also a Southern American character, mm-hmm. who it turns out is played by an English actor called Andrew Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember hearing Andrew Lincoln when he was being himself, thinking with this rather middle posh English accent. And I couldn't believe that he'd put on the Southern accent. He did it so well. Well, in this new series, Preacher, the lead actor is Dominic Cooper,
yes.
who's also an English actor who also plays an extremely convincing American accent, Southern American accent. So there's a bit of a trend going on here. Anyway, I think it's worth a look if you like that Tarantino style thing. It's really good. A couple of links, Steve. The artist in the comic book, oh, yeah. as I mentioned, was a guy called Steve Dillon,
mm-hmm.
who also was the artist in the comic book of Marvel's Civil War, which the movie was based on, we've been talking about the last couple of weeks.
Right.
And Dominic Cooper, who plays Preacher, played Tony Stark's father in two of the Marvel movies.
Oh, wow. It's getting a touch incestuous, isn't it?
Really? I know. You're taking notes here because there'll be a test later.
You've lost me.
Anyway, I won't spend too much longer on it. I think it's, that's your taste. I'll be watching some more, that's for sure.
And you say it's available on Lightbox?
Well, at the moment, as far as I know, it's just on Lightbox. I don't know where else. I'll try and find out a little bit more about that, whether it'll eventually be, you can get it anywhere else. But it may be one of those deals like, the things you've got to be a Netflix subscriber to watch, and maybe right. this is an example, you've got to be a Lightbox subscriber.
There are ways around this. Obviously, we couldn't possibly condone them. Heaven forfend.
No.
But there are ways around it.
Now, you've mentioned one or two things coming up already, Steve. Anything else we should keep an eye out or ear out for?
Glad you asked.
Yes.
Well, in terms of music, there's a couple of big ones coming up within the next month. I think we've mentioned in the past Leo Sayer and Lulu, which is quite entertaining, June the 26th. Same night as Steel Panther at the Power Station. The Cure, of course, are coming in July.
Right.
Selena Gomez has announced. And I can tell already that you're going to be queuing up for tickets for that one. She's going to be playing Vector Arena on the 13th of August.
Okay.
Slipknot at the other end of the spectrum.
Something for everyone.
There isn't the just, yeah. They're also at the Vector Arena in October. Coldplay.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're really covering the entire spectrum here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Coldplay are going to be doing Mount Smart Stadium on December the 6th. They've announced recently.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the big music announcements. Now, the cinematic, the filmic, I believe, is the word we're using today.
Yes.
The filmic announcement for this week, of course, is going to be that next week sees the opening of the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
film. Be still my beating heart.
I know. Contain your excitement if you can.
We might have to go and see that.
We might have to, yes. Oh. Well, that's opening on Thursday in Auckland.
Right, okay. That's
got to be worth a look. So that's a quick rundown of what we've got to look forward to in the near future.
Good stuff. Okay, well, this has been Crave. He's been Steve McCabe. In fact, he's always Steve McCabe.
I'm very good at it, actually.
Yes.
I've been doing it all my life.
I know, he's got it down pat. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you.
Well, hang on a second. Who are you?
Yeah, what's my name again? I'll tell you in a minute. But first of all, if you want to email us, please do podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook, or if you know who we are, and you can follow us on Twitter at Crave Podcast.
I am, in fact, Simon Mercep. Pause for dramatic effect.
And I am without doubt Steve McCabe.
Glad to hear it. And that's what's been entertaining us this week.
Excellent.